I'll now call the second case, case number A24-1096, Joseph Gardner v. State of Minnesota et al. And feel free to take a few minutes. Good morning, counsel. As I'm sure you're both aware, you will each be given 15 minutes for your argument today. Appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Before beginning, there's a button underneath the podium. Please feel free to adjust that to your comfort before you begin your argument. And we are only making an audio record of today's hearing, so if you'd please identify yourselves and your client before beginning your argument, we would appreciate it. With that, counsel for appellant, you may begin when you're ready.
May it please the court,
counsel.
My name is Catherine McKinnon, and I represent appellant Joseph Gardner, who is a beneficiary of the Minnesota Medical Assistance Programs. He seeks dental implants and fixed bridges and related services to treat total edentulism, or complete toothlessness. His request was denied by the insurer, Health Partners, by the state agency, the Department of Human Services, on the grounds that there was no coverage based upon the statutory language. In the district court, the coverage issue was resolved when the court declared the statutory problem unconstitutional in violation of the Equal Protection Clause, but the district court offered him no remedy. He is still without the treatment he needs.
Counsel, can I ask you, in terms of the decision Department of Human Services, it strikes me to be a bit of a disparate ruling in the reconsideration order because there the director of appeals said, however, in this matter, appellant has not provided any evidence other than his own statements that the dental work he wants completed is medically necessary. And I didn't see such language in the original DHS judge order that was sought for reconsideration. And so can you help clarify for me what was the second director looking at something different?
I wish I could clarify for you. There is no explanation for that statement. The medical necessity evidence was in the record. It had been put in by his original attorney, Aaron Hartung, at the HP level, at the Health Partners level.
Can you help clarify that, though? It's clear it was put in for the internal appeal at Health Partners, but what's not clear to me from the record before us, and it's clear was in the record before the district court, but it's not clear whether it was put in at the appeal before the DHS hearing.
I was not counsel at that time. Mr. Gardner was proceeding pro se, but he tells me it's always been there. It's always been in the record, and he put it in, and he had it there before the court. Of course, the focus got on the coverage issue, but the medical necessity had been amply addressed and was there. And to your question, Judge Slider, the only thing I can say is that he was mistaken and may have just not taken a complete review of the record. And was focusing on the record that the ALJ had used to issue the ALJ's recommended decision. But it is, in fact, completely wrong. There was ample evidence.
You think
go ahead.
I was just wondering if you would anticipate from the briefing of Health Partners that it's undisputed that the same record was before the DHS, but I think, as I read its argument, it wasn't. District Court was right. It wasn't developed because it wasn't the basis of the decision. It was coverage. Hence, we didn't go into the medical necessity, though the same records that it had in its internal review were before the Department of Human Services.
I believe that's what my opponent is suggesting in her brief, but I don't think that the record actually reflects that a decision was made. We're going to just focus on the coverage problem. It's really not clear what was going on because the record was all there. Now, perhaps...
The appeal then before the district court was were the findings regarding in the initial DHS decision about appellant's medical situation and then the subsequent determination on reconsideration that appellant had not met the burden of proving that the requested services are medically necessary, was that challenged at all at the district court level?
Challenged by the respondents or challenged by Mr. Gardner?
Mr. Gardner.
Well,
Mr. Gardner challenged the constitutionality,
right.
But did Mr. Gardner challenge DHS's determination on reconsideration that the burden of proving that the requested services, that he had not met his burden of proving that the requested services are medically necessary?
I believe he did throw in that this is medically necessary, and it's in the record why it's medically necessary. But the focus of the hearing before the district court was clearly on that constitutional question, for sure. The testimony is, well, it's not test, but the transcript would indicate that that was where the court was focusing its energy. The problem here is that when the decision was issued and declared the statutory language unconstitutional on equal protection grounds, the court gave no remedy. Mr. Gardner was left with no way to get what he needed because the court just said, well, it's undeveloped. And it wasn't undeveloped. I will acknowledge that my client was pro se and was proceeding pro se, and that may mean that some of the more elaborate arguments that an attorney might make weren't fully, but he made a lot of argument. In fact, I think it was the district court that said, you've written a lot. You've submitted a lot. Don't proceed further. I get it.
Could it be, counsel, that the court just perhaps used the wrong description, not so much undeveloped, perhaps from your client's standpoint, but it just wasn't litigated. It was not there's no factual finding except the one we're referring to in the reconsideration. So the point being is it just it stopped prior to getting to that. Would that have been a better assessment, some sort of description like that, for the district court to have said, which I assume you would not disagree with based on what we see?
It definitely, nothing happened. I would agree with that. I don't actually know what happened to that hearing any more than this court would know because I wasn't there, and the transcript doesn't really give us a clear understanding. In fact, a counsel for the insurer made some arguments that hadn't been briefed. She hadn't submitted a brief. It was all very informal. And so, but that was, the question is, did he submit what needed to be submitted? And the answer is yes. And if...
Would it be safe to say, though, that there's no decision based on what he was submitted
correct.
Of medical? So
aside from the Director Collins's statement that there wasn't any... that's most... as you started off, troubling in the sense that it suggests he actually looked at it and he saw that there was nothing other than his statements, and that's just simply not correct.
So normally...
An appropriate disposition here be to remand it back to the agency to... because the statute has been determined to be unconstitutional to... make a new determination, to reconsider the medical necessity given the information, the lack of explanation in the reconsideration order as to why there was a determination that Mr. Gardner hadn't met his burden of proving medical necessity?
Well, I think that would not be the appropriate remedy. And my authority for that would be the Supreme Court's decision in the Doe versus State case and the decision of this court in, escaping me at the moment, a case involving a gentleman with a wheelchair, and he'd proven medical necessity, but the case had been denied at DHS.
But here we have a specific determination that by the agency that Mr. Gardner had not proven medical necessity, and whereas in the case that you're relying on, the Johnson case,
The
transcript was much more well developed there in terms of testimony, and so we're in a little bit of a different situation.
Well, there's two cases. There's the Johnson case and the Doe case, and in the Doe case, which was at the Supreme Court, the court said it didn't appear that there had been any development of the medical necessity argument, and the court just said, It's wrong. It's improper under the statute. Give the claimant the benefits. So I think the court actually has the authority to do that. And then I think the second argument as to why this would not be a good idea to remand is that it really is contrary to judicial efficiency for sure. We've come all this way to try and get this man affixed bridges and dental implants, and Mr. Gardner, pro se gentleman, did his work and did his job. The parties on the other side just didn't do it and or didn't write it down. And it appears the third possibility is they did it and just flatly misunderstood. But why should the judicial system be burdened with starting this whole thing all over again? And more importantly, my client is walking around with no teeth. And has been since 2022.
Can I ask a question? I just am curious. You know, the statute has since been amended, and certainly your client needs some medical or some dental care. Is there some reason why your client couldn't reapply in light of the change in the statute? Or hasn't reapplied? I mean,
he may be able to reapply, yes. But the policy and the statute, while the coverage issue has changed, some of the provisions as to what is covered or what is, you know, what the medical necessity guidelines are have changed.
Yeah, I looked at the statutes and I was wondering about that. Okay.
It could put him in the very unenviable situation of going back, starting again, and finding out that there are more rigorous standards or even no opportunity to get what he needs and related services. And this gets into the whole question again. This has taken so long, right? And at this point, it's possible something more may be needed because he has not had this. And so the bones in the mouth can start to degrade when you don't have these therapeutic devices. So it might be necessary at this point for him to need something more extensive, and we would take the position that should be covered on the basis of the original claim, because the statute says and the regs say, you or rules, that you are entitled to, when you are entitled to dental implants and bridges and related services. That's in the regulation. And related services, and we would take the position that he should be able to get what he had asked for, what he proved up, and what he may now need in addition if his medical circumstance or dental circumstances has
But altered. Doesn't that, I mean, wouldn't that situation, and you can disagree with me, be a reason for remanding to the agency to determine the full scope of what your client medically needs to date, given how old the medical evidence is at this point? There's a reason why we like to defer to agencies in terms of their special expertise. I don't know a lot about dental implants, and so does the very fact that time may have changed, does that warrant a remand to the agency to sort of understand what the full scope of your client's medical needs are at this point?
But is that reasonable when the overarching point of medical assistance, which is, you know, a federal Medicaid program as we deliver it here in the state of Minnesota, is to give care, and appropriate care. And if what's happened here is that the parties opposing him have dithered and not done their job when he did what he needed to do, and now because they dithered, he's got to start all over again, may not have coverage if he starts a new claim, may not actually under the current regulations, and more importantly, that regulation that my opponent cited in their reply brief, the criteria for approval for prior authorization, there was a lot of talk about subpart C of it's 9505.5030. Those are the criteria that are sort of added on to all the other criteria when it's dental implants. You got to have prior authorization. And the part C of that rule says, it must be timely considering the nature and present state of the recipient's medical condition. I put to the court that what that means is, okay, if it's taken a long time, you got to look at it again and figure out what related services are based upon the original claim. Otherwise, it's a gotcha. It's a total gotcha for somebody who's done what he's done, and why should he be harmed by having to go back and start this thing all over again? In addition, I really don't think that there's any argument that he established medical necessity and met all the criteria. He put in all the evidence, and they said nothing, and they aren't challenging it now. So the only real argument that respondents are making is, well, a failure to rebut the evidence was a decision. It was a strategic decision. First of all, there's nothing that shows that that was a strategic decision. It looks like I've run out of time.
Yes,
thank you.
You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Anu Chidasima. I'm with the firm of Bassford Remley, and I represent Respondent Health Partners. Medical assistance is not designed to cover every possible service or procedure. And that is exactly what occurred here when Mr. Gardner, his dentist, applied for treatment specifically for dental implants on top for fixed bridges and four on the bottom for fixed bridges back on October 10, 2022. That is the scope of treatment on appeal, and that is it. It is not what he may now require. If you think about it, if Mr. Gardner had a whole new plan at this moment, like a different company, would they be paying for the new treatment that he now requires? Yes, because that is something that he now requires. The scope of what Health Partners and what Mr. Gardner is asking Health Partners to pay for is what was previously applied for. And so because of that, the scope of this appeal is narrowed to that specific treatment.
Here, can you help clarify the record issue for us or just confirm that the record before DHS contain the medical information that Attorney Hartung provided to Health Partners?
Yes.
On behalf of Mr. Gardner?
Absolutely. So from what I see in Mr. Gardner's letter that he had submitted, and I have to just scroll for the specific pages, but he had written a letter for reconsideration, and in that letter he had cited to the very exhibits that I believe, you know, that had been attached by his attorney. And so he was referring to these exhibits, and in the record, that package is below his appeal along with other documents. To me, when I look at that, I look at it and say, okay, Director Collins did have the entire record before him. However, because of the specific burden on the provider to establish that the medical necessity issue, he decided it was not medically necessary. And in fact, if you look at the actual record submitted, you have a letter from, argument from counsel, from his attorneys. You have literature just generally on dental implants. There's no real comparison of, you know, what's the most cost-effective for him. If you look at dental implants versus dentures, which is kind of discussed, the providers who support, you know, who they provide a limited report.
But you'd agree that the order on reconsideration doesn't explain why notwithstanding all the findings in the initial order about appellant's medical situation, that why the agency concluded that appellant had not met the burden of proving that the services are medically necessary. There wasn't any explanation there.
And in that, I respectfully disagree. I respectfully disagree because I think that the provider or Director Collins is giving the reason is that he did not meet his burden. The providers didn't, and he didn't. Basically,
I mean, but there isn't any explanation
beyond
he
that
he didn't meet his burden. There's no detailed discussion about such as you were getting into about cost comparisons and that type of thing.
Yes, that is not the president and the director's decision.
Correct, counsel, the order that was under reconsideration didn't get to medical necessity despite, if I understand your point correctly, the same records that before health partners, including his orthodontist and the psychologist, that was all before health partners, and it was also before the administrative judge at the Department of Human Services in that first decision.
Yes, and so this...
Let me finish my
question. Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. But the reason I'm asking is...
But Judge Sleater, you're talking about the district court order?
No,
the first DHS order.
The first DHS order?
Not the recon order.
Not the recon.
Okay, I'm sorry, I was confused.
I just wanted to clarify what order was under reconsideration when the director made that phrase. The first order had the medical information and made findings that health partners had, correct?
Correct, and so the whole...
Just to clarify, though, the decision... Oh. Didn't get to medical necessity, despite having all that record evidence, stopped at no coverage because he was not a pregnant adult.
Yes, and that takes us to Health Partners' position this entire time, is that there has not been coverage under the October or under the 2022 plan when Mr. Gardner applied. There simply was no coverage for dental implants for Mr. Gardner. And so it never got to medical necessity. When a provider seeks pre-authorization, medical necessity is one of the factors that's considered, but that's for a covered service. This was not a covered service, so we never got to medical necessity, and so Health Partners denied based on that. Mr. Gardner's attorney still submitted arguments for medical necessity, but it was as simple as there's no coverage, end of story. So in that, the burden never shifted to Health Partners, as appellant suggests, because appellant never met his burden that he was eligible for coverage.
But now we have a situation where the district court found that the statute was unconstitutional and Health Partners was incorrect in its position.
And on that, I'm not really sure.
So why doesn't the Doe case suggest that this court couldn't just order the relief that he's seeking?
In the Doe case, that case was different in that there had been a finding of medical necessity and the opponent did not address those arguments. What happened was the decision that was made, the coverage was denied based on two other things other than medical necessity, but there was a finding of medical necessity. Here we never had a finding that Mr. Gardner had medical necessity met. And so that issue was undeveloped, and the district court was correct in making that determination.
Can I just want to clarify with respect to this record issue. You would agree that Collins was incorrect when he said appellant has not provided any evidence other than his own statements that the dental work he completed is medically necessary. You would agree that that was an incorrect statement of the record on reconsideration.
I agree that if Director Collins was referring to
I'm saying that the his
statements.
Finding that the only evidence in the record was his statements, you would agree that that was an incorrect representation of the record on reconsideration.
I agree. I think okay. That in my reading of it was that he was referring to Mr. Gardner and his attorney's arguments, and so I thought he was taking that as statements. But you're right, there are documents attached to that package, you know, from psychologist and from his family doctor, not any dentist. And I want to also point out for the court, the only dental providers that have submitted documentation for Mr. Gardner are his dental specialist Vadina. And if you look at the actual records that were submitted, nowhere do those dentists state in their records, and I will give you the reference, Your Honors, but nowhere does it state this treatment is medically necessary. In fact, you can tell from the description that they were discussing multiple different types of treatments. Mr. Gardner was exploring them, and he wasn't sure when he was going to get them. And then ultimately what was submitted was the four dental implants on top and four on bottom. And so I don't – it's my reading of this record is that Director Collins looked at this and said, well, there's no dentist that is saying this is medically necessary, therefore the burden has not been met. And I think that's a reasonable inference.
Record, you said you could give us the record
references. Oh, yes, thank you. It starts on page 111 of document 33, so HP000111, and then it goes on to 116. And so the descriptions that the dentists provide are on 111. To 112, and then what follows is the proposed treatment plan and estimate, and that is the exact treatment that has been applied for. And if I may address some of the arguments about waiver that appellant had made. So this brings me back to sort of that burden of proof shifting argument. It never shifted to Health Partners. Health Partners never needed to respond to medical necessity because there was just no coverage. And at any time, there was no waiver. It has to be an intentional waiver. Generally, is what they looked at in the law. They talk about intentional waiver. There was never an intention to waive that argument. It just was not developed. In some of the case law that counsel had brought up in the briefing, there was also a case. We talked about Doe v. State, where it's distinguished from the present case. But there's also another case. My apologies, I just want to get to it. In the matter of, or it was the Minnesota Power case that council discusses, that, I believe in their briefing, counsel was talking about the lack of explanation for the decision and that should not, be a reason that this court should not provide deference to the DHS's decision. However, in that case, there was a different statute that applied that specifically required the ALJ to provide a decision or to provide an explanation. And so that is completely different from what we have in front of us.
Can I ask you, counsel, in terms of what you said earlier, that it wasn't developed, and so the burden, it never shifted. Maybe you can explain the litigation strategy a little bit to me, because were you so confident at the Department of Human Services that the administrative judgment was a stop at coverage, and hence you decided not to respond to the medical evidence that he did submit? Because I'm assuming, absent being really confident, you'd want to have an alternative argument. Well, even if he is covered, there's no medical necessity. And that's kind of the point the appellant's making in why you didn't rebut it. But was it absolutely clear to everybody that since the only decision at Health Partners was based on coverage, at least it seems like it was, or maybe it was alternatively, but in any event, what's appealed is just whether there's coverage?
So at no point did Mr. Gardner's plan, and even now his contract hasn't changed, it does not have coverage for dental implants. It very specifically provides the list of services that he qualifies for, and that's it. So it's not I heard the argument that this was a strategic decision not to respond to the medical necessity, but it's more simple than that. There's no coverage under a contract, so that's the denial. That's how insurance companies deny. I was not involved at that level, but I mean, that's just a very clear basis for denial. And so that issue just never was properly before Health Partners.
Preparing for the DHS administrative hearing, that's why Health Partners just stopped also making the argument and didn't do any responding, any arguments about medical necessity.
I wasn't involved, but I would assume that because of such a clear denial that was why they relied on it.
So what's the appropriate remedy here?
So Mr. Gardner can just reapply, and that is what I believe that the court, there was some discussion that the district court didn't
give
a remedy.
I mean, you don't disagree the law has changed substantially since he made this claim, and so there definitely could be consequences for forcing him to reapply. And so why is that an adequate remedy given this situation and the fact that he never got a hearing on medical necessity when he should have.
And, Your Honor, you talked about a remand to have the court or to have DHS take a look at what sort of, what does he need? That would be a practical remedy. Let's, you know, keep this claim open, let's say, and if he needed to go get checked out and then see what the situation is. Mr. Gardner has been having the ability to go and get checked out all this time. As a practical matter, his dentists are going to need to see him now to see what he needs. No dentist is just going to, perform care on a patient without knowing what they need. And so as a practical matter, that is a solution. However, in terms of this, the legality of and the arguments on appeal, I believe that everything that has been decided below has been completely supported by the law. There was no,
Well, you've conceded that he's never been able to put Health Partners to its burden of proving that this isn't medically necessary, right?
The burden is on Mr. Gardner to prove medical necessity and his providers.
But he's never really been offered, but he's never been given the opportunity to prove up medical necessity. Right, or to have DHS actually analyze the medical necessity of this.
Yeah, I think that is the correct in that he's provided evidence, and I don't think that they ever got to that issue other than Director Collins taking a look at it. So,
making an incorrect finding about the record.
If that's how he says that he may only made was only appellant statements. I don't know if he meant the appellant's attorney's statements in submission. It's unclear to me.
Well, that there's more than just statements. There is medical evidence that's been submitted into the record. It appears that Collins did not actually review that, and the DHS decision before that didn't actually analyze medical necessity. So we're currently in a position where a statute or a regulation has been ruled unconstitutional, and the agency has not actually evaluated whether this procedure is medically necessary.
I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. The only thing I want to sort of distinguish is I don't know that from what I see, Director Collins did take a look at the medical necessity issue, and I think it's a reasonable inference that he looked at everything Mr. Gardner had submitted and said it wasn't enough. And so
I guess 5 minutes ago you agreed with me that it was a misstatement of the record, that all that was submitted was Mr. Gardner's statements, as opposed to that he actually did submit some evidence regarding his need for this treatment.
What I was saying is that I don't know what he meant by that, but it's clear that Mr. Gardner submitted more, and including into the reconsideration request to the Director Collins, and that Director Collins said that statement, and my reading of it is that he was referring to everything that was submitted by Mr. Gardner. But okay. I'm not Mr. Director Collins, so...
Yeah. Oh, and DHS isn't here, so you're in a weird position.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. Does the court have any more questions? Otherwise, I will conclude. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, counsel. Counsel for appellant.
I just have two points I want to clarify.
And before you do that, I'm just curious, do you happen to have any information why DHS didn't take part either at the district court or here?
There was some question about why did Ms. Hartung submit the medical necessity on the initial appeal at HP? Why did she do that when the denial in October of 22 just referenced coverage? And I want to respond to that. I have two responses. First of all, that denial was terse and vague. It said no coverage, and then cites to 256B.0625B and or min R 9595.0270 subpart 10. Now that is, if you actually go and look at that, a really conflicting analysis of why there was no coverage. I mean, she could have just said, you're a non-pregnant adult. That wouldn't have been too hard to do, but she didn't, or whoever wrote the letter. The problem is, it says coverage is denied based upon this and or this. Well, the first part, the statute, yep, that does present a problem because he was not, he was a non-pregnant adult. But the reference and or to 9595 sub 10, actually, that is a provision that explains when implants will be given and what the criteria are for giving dental implants. So And then he used that, you know, law student no-no and or. So there was nothing clear about that. Now, secondly, it was logical for her to put in medical necessity. Why? Because he had made the same claim in July. He had tried. And how did HP respond? It said, you didn't establish medical necessity. HP did not say there was no coverage. They never even raised that argument in July. They focused on medical necessity. So logically, what did she do? When she couldn't tell what the coverage thing meant, she went at what were the requirements for medical necessity, which are basically what is in 9595.027 subpart 10. Now, the second thing I want to say is we'd ask the court to please reverse and direct respondents to provide Mr. Gardner with the services needed to give him dental implants, fixed bridges, and whatever related services are needed to accomplish that objective. Also, we have asked that the court consider publishing this decision because it represents a very significant problem for Medicaid recipients, how to process and get through this process. And this is, I think, a clear example of what can go really, really wrong when someone tries very hard to do the right thing. Thank you.
Can I ask counsel, what would be the syllabus point that you would be asking us to write?
Syllabus point. It feels like that was just in the argument before us. But anyway.
What I'm getting at is, you know, what specifically needs clarification? I mean, we've all talked about the mess of the record, but that this won't be the first or last case, I suspect, an administrative type appeal.
I think one of the things that would be really helpful is to point out that if an administrative agency is going to get all this deference to its experience and its technical wisdom and all this, you got to write it down, and you got to explain it, and you got to use that technical expertise. And here, not only do we not have any written explanation, we actually have an opinion that is flat out untrue. And, you know, we do put people in these positions of authority at administrative agencies to make correct decisions and to get people benefits, and that didn't happen. We're asking this court to make sure it does. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for your argument in this case. The case has been submitted, and we will issue a decision in the time prescribed by statute.